KSIV now presents Encounter, a public service program of Bot Radio Network, dedicated to keeping you informed about the issues that affect your life. Now, here's today's Encounter broadcast.
Hi, I'm Judy Rudlick, and this is Encounter. Listen to this quote by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Many people living in the West are dissatisfied with their own society. They despise it or accuse it of no longer being up to the level of maturity by mankind. This causes many to sway towards socialism, which is a false and dangerous current. Is that where we are headed today? Let's ask my guest, William Federer, who is the author of Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present, how the deep stake capitalizes on crisis to consolidate control. Hey, Bill, welcome to Encounter.
Judy, great to be with you.
Well, it's great to be with you, too. And when you sent me this book, I said, this book is really timely because people are really disgruntled today with what's happening in our world and in the United States as well.
Right. So we trace in the book how, again, the most common form of government is the king, Pharaoh, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, Tsar. As the centuries go on, the kingdoms get bigger. Till the King of England had the biggest, and America Saunders broke away and flipped it and made the people the king. So a republic is where the people are king, ruling through representatives. The word citizen means co-king. So when we pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic, we're basically pledging allegiance to us being in charge of ourselves.
So we're the co-kings of this society in the United States right now.
Right. So when somebody protests the flag, what they're effectively saying is, I don't want to be the king anymore. I protest this system where I participate in ruling myself. It's like, okay, somebody else would be glad to rule your life. And I studied how they flip, how republics and democracies end up having power reconcentrated back into the government. And that's the synopsis of this book. So socialism is dictatorship. So every socialist country has a dictator, Stalin, Pol Pot, Ho Chi Minh, Castro, Mao Zedong. Even the socialist-leaning countries in Europe have royal families of Belgium and Sweden and Norway and so forth. And so the socialism means a structured society with a ruling class and a ruled class. So the ruling class are the deep state elites, and they're smarter than everybody, so they think. And they make all the decisions, and everybody on the bottom is the ruled class, and their fate is totally controlled. Now, I go back to Plato, 380 BC. Plato, in his writings, talks about Atlantis, this highly structured city and very advanced and scientific and military, and then it sinks in the sea with an earthquake. But he keeps referring back to this as this ideal, perfect society.
So, the dream society.
Yeah, so Plato said that a democracy, demos means people, krasi means rule. A democracy is based on the people having virtue, but they really don't have virtue, because if you give them a choice of giving up their life or giving up their virtue, they'll always give up their virtue to save their lives. So it's just a show, and he says that the chief characteristics of democracy's tolerance. Everybody learns how to tolerate each other. He says it's charming. It's like an embroidery patchwork, like a marketplace bazaar where you can buy any viewpoint. And then they begin to tolerate people that are a little bit off. And then they tolerate people that are a lot off. Till finally, they're tolerating crooks and crimes and fraud and broad daylight crime and so, looting, and nobody does anything.
So virtue is gone. The core value of virtue is gone. Is that what you're saying?
Right. And so when virtue's gone, and there's lawlessness, and Plato even says that the young man gives into libertinism and useless and unnecessary pleasures, even incest and unnatural union. Yes, that's what he's talking about, this casting off of moral restraints, sexual promiscuity. And in this chaos, the people begin to experience lawlessness and insecurity and robbing and stealing and looting, and they all panic, and they surrender all their freedoms to a governor who promises to restore order, but he has to take away all your freedoms, freedom of assembly, freedom to possess and own guns, everything. And so Plato said the best you can hope for is a nice tyrant, called him a philosopher king. He's the head of gold, and his administrators and military are the arms and chest of silver. They are the ruling class.
And that's amazing that at that time Plato thought of all this stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, and then he says that the people are the abdomen of iron and bronze, and they are the ruled class. And so the people own no property. They have no privacy. They don't even raise their own kids. The kids are taken away by the state and indoctrinated with a common core type. Noble lies is what Plato called them, and the lies helped the king to stay in power. The people were tracked everywhere they went. So that was 380 BC. That's Plato, and that's the beginning of socialism. Now let's skip forward 2,000 years. Columbus discovers America, and 20 years later, you have Sir Thomas More write Island of Utopia. And it's this fictitious island off the coast of South America. The word utopia means nowhere. And he is sort of poking fun at the King of England for wanting to control everybody's lives. And so the Island of Utopia, everything is controlled by the king and his ruling class. Everybody lives in identical three-story houses. They wear identical clothes. They eat in identical commune type of monastery settings. The kids are owned by the state. The state even decides who gets to have kids and who doesn't. And everyone is tracked wherever they go. And if you are caught without your passport, it's a lifetime of slavery.
And, of course, this is a fictitious book that's written about, it's kind of a parody on socialism.
Right. But that concept, utopia, went into our vernacular. And it got this idea of, a perfectly ordered, structured society. Well, now let's skip forward another century, and you got Sir Francis Bacon.
Now we're in 1600s.
And then the Pilgrims. Now, the Pilgrims originally were a company colony, which had bylaws written by the rich investors. And these investors looked back to Plato, Sir Thomas More, Sir Francis Bacon, and
really?
Lo and behold, the bylaws said that everything that the Pilgrims have is owned in common. Everything gained by cooking, hunting, fishing shall go into ye common stock. And everyone's livelihood comes out of ye common stock. And William Bradford said they almost starved to death. He says the young man objected to having to do three times as much as the old guy, but didn't get paid anymore. The resourceful and creative man didn't get any more, and he was forced to work for other men's wives without recompense. And he says the wives objected to having to wash other men's clothes. And William Bradford says this communal system was tried by honest people, and it didn't work. We nearly starved to death, so we had to come up with a fitter plan. And so he says after much discussion, it was decided that every family would get their own plot of land.
And which is democracy.
And he says this made all hands more industrious. Even the women now went willingly into the field and brought their little ones with them, where before they would have alleged weakness and to have forced them would have been great oppression. So here, the Plato, Sir Thomas More, Sir Francis Bacon, that's all theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the Pilgrims actually tried to live this thing, and they almost starved it as they scrapped
and
it.
And
they came up with this covenant form of government with capitalism, right? And so that is the model for our country.
Wow, anyway. That's really amazing. And to think the fictitiousness was tried in reality by the Pilgrims, and it didn't work. So as we look at this whole thing, fathers and forefathers before us tried it, and it didn't work. So it looks like we're going toward that in the United States, and so many countries in the world live under the socialistic rule today. Why is that, Bill?
Well, it's the eternal bait and switch. You have every new generation says, this time we're going to do it right, when really they don't. So it's like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. It's like the Lorelei, or the sirens on an island that lure Ulysses to the sailors to crash on the rocks. It's this continual dream of a heaven on earth, of a perfect society. But the problem is, human nature always destroys it, because human nature is selfish.
Whenever you've got
the government running programs, the people running the programs are always going to run it to their own benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And so even Julius Caesar says, use money to get men, use men to get money. So the saying is, whoever controls the purse strings has the power.
So after the Pilgrims tried the socialistic dream society that has been purported for centuries before they came, and they found that it didn't work, how did they put together democracy and a plan for democracy? How long did it take, and how was it constructed?
Right. So I go back to the New England pastors that founded Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and they went back to the Bible. What part of the Bible? That first 400-year period when Israel came out of Egypt. It's called the Hebrew Republic, before they get King Saul. And lo and behold, it's the first instance in recorded human history of a nation with millions of people and no king. And it worked because every single citizen was taught the law, and every citizen was personally accountable to God to follow the law. And so the idea that there's a God watching everyone, he wants you to be fair, he's going to hold you accountable in the future. So you're about to steal, nobody's around, and then you think, God is watching me, he wants me to be fair, he's going to hold me accountable. Maybe I should hesitate stealing. And it creates something in your head called a conscience.
A conscience.
So everybody follows this law, you can maintain order.
Wow. Bill Federer is my guest. I'm Judy Redlich. This is Encounter. We're going to go to a break. But he wrote Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present, How the Deep Stake Capitalizes on Crisis to Consolidate Control. We'll be right back. We're talking a little bit about the dream ideology of does socialism work? And now we're to the point where the Pilgrims found that it didn't really work, so they worked on devising a plan for democracy, which our United States lives under today. But how long will it last? I'm Judy Redlich. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Judy Redlich. Thanks for tuning in to Encounter today. My guest is William Federer. If you've known Bill before, he's written lots of books about our nation, our history, our world, its history. And he just came out with a new book called Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present. If you missed our last segment, we talked about the ideological dream of socialism and how people wrote about it in the past and how the Pilgrims tried it and it just failed. So they devised a plan for democracy, which the U.S. has been following ever since then. So, Bill, what happened then? How long did it take them to put this plan together? And that's where our Constitution comes from, doesn't it?
Right. So we took the power of a king and separated it. But socialism has taken the power of the people and reconcentrating it into the hands of this deep state ruling elite that always ends up having one political boss at the top who ends up being a dictator. So we have a revolution. France has a revolution. Our revolution is based on Christian principles. Theirs is based on getting rid of Christianity. They call it liberté, égalité, fraternité. And fraternité is the French word for socialism. It's the collective that you have to give up your individual rights and liberties in favor of the collective. And so you had a writer of the social contract, his name was Rousseau. He says, when the state says to a citizen, it is expedient for the state that you should die, that citizen ought to die because his life is a gift made conditionally by the state.
So wow, that's state, like so, euthanasia.
Right. And so here, Napoleon conquers Europe. And the king of Prussia, one of the German kingdoms, decides that he doesn't want to be conquered really easily again, so he wants to strengthen his state. So he gets a philosopher named Hegel. He's a professor at the University of Berlin. And Hegel says the state is God walking on earth. The state is our mortal God. All the worth that a human being possesses, he possesses only through the state. The state does not have to follow abstract rules of good and bad, like the Bible. It's just a power grab by the state. And the state decides who lives and who dies. So this, who was a member of the Young Hegelians, which was a radical student group with Hegel as the professor, who was a member of the Young Hegelians but Karl Marx?
Oh.
And so he incorporates this, the state is God, into Marxism.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get rid of the middle class. So Marx and Engels wrote the Communist Manifesto, and he says that they must have crises, and every new crisis must be worse than the one before, putting out of business more small capitalists. This will increase the number of the unemployed and create a commercial crisis that will bring about a social revolution.
And that's exactly what's happening today with the pandemic.
Right. So they want to get rid of the middle class intentionally. So all that's left is the ruling class, the deep state. They're on top. They know everything. And these common people that are totally in the dark, and they're controlled by the state. And so who was also in Germany that bought into the Marxist concept? But Hitler. Do you know Hitler was the head of the he was the chancellor of the German Republic in 1933, voted in by one vote. And then Hitler had a radical, violent group, sort of like Antifa or BLM. It was called the Brown Shirts, and they were led by a radical homosexual named Ernst Röhm. And they were also nicknamed stormtroopers. So these brown shirts would storm into the meetings of Hitler's political opponents and shout down the speaker and disrupt the meeting. And then they would lock arms and block access to buildings and lock arms and block streets. Could you imagine people locking arms and blocking streets?
Wow.
And then they went into the cities and they smashed windows and looted and set buildings on fire.
And that's exactly what's happening today in the U.S. So it happened back in Hitler's time, and it's happening, it's mirroring itself in the U.S. today. So, Bill, we have about 7 minutes left of this show, and I want to ask you, where do we go? Because it looks like we're headed in the same direction.
Right. So we have, in the confusion, Hitler rounds up his political enemies, has them shot. And then he kills all the brown shirts in the Night of the Long Knives. And then everyone praises Hitler as a hero because he cracked down on this disruptive group. But when the dust settles, they just realize they got condemned to a dictatorship. Well, after World War II, Britain, France, Germany give independence to their former colonies. And so now they're brand new countries with new leaders. Mm-hmm. It's nice, except the Soviet Union wants to make them satellites of the Soviet Union. So they send in KGB agents into these countries to identify groups that have grievances. Maybe they've been ethnically discriminated against or religiously discriminated against or racially discriminated against. It. They just came through a world war, so there's lots of dissatisfied people. And they organize them into victims and oppressors. And then they begin to stir up protests and riots. And then they break into violence and bloodshed. And then they co-opt the media with bribes and threats to blame the leader of the country. And then when the public gets upset enough, they do a coup and kill the leader or do a rigged election. And then they install the Soviet puppet. And everybody's happy for a while because the violence stops. And then they realize they just got condemned to communist totalitarianism.
But, Bill, that's happening in our country today. So what do you see the solution out of us going down that same road?
Well, the first thing is to recognize that it is a plan, and that, you know, when you realize that they just want to find division of any different group, whether it's women's group, whether it's racial, whether it's, you know, economic. Interesting. So Truman does nothing. He thinks the United Nations will bring world peace. But then Eisenhower is faced with a leader in Iran who's siding with the Soviet Union, and he nationalized the Iranian oil industry. And you say, so what? Well, Britain didn't have any oil, so in 1908, Britain formed the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. You know it better as BP. And so once Mossadegh takes the control, Britain has no oil. They go to Eisenhower for help. Eisenhower sends over Kermit Roosevelt Jr., the grandson of Teddy Roosevelt, and he's a CIA operative on the ground. It's Operation Ajax. He does the thing the KGB did. He recruits radical, violent imams. He recruits mobsters. They stage riots and protests. They blame, co-opt the media to blame Mossadegh, the leader, for all the problems. When the public gets upset enough, they put Mossadegh under house arrest, lock him away where he dies, and they install the Shah. And we do the same thing in Guatemala, 1954, in the Congo, 1960, Dominican Republic, even Chile. And the communists do the same thing, with Brezhnev hugging Yasser Arafat, starting the PLO, and Brezhnev hugging Castro, taking over Cuba, and then all. This is the Cold War, and it's the subject of every spy novel, right? You go to the third world country, you run into Russians and CIA, and there's an assassination. The only difference this time around is it's taking place on our own soil. So we know that there's people in the Department of Justice, CIA, FBI, State Department, that do not like our president, and they've been trying for 4 years to
get rid of him.
Right, and so what we see here with these riots is somebody's organizing them. You don't have pallets of bricks dropped off right where they're going to have a riot. And we in St. Louis saw MORE, M-O-R-E, Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment, and they staged the riots in Ferguson, and they got $30 million from George Soros. And, of course, after they weren't paid, they protested in front of the MORE offices, started a hashtag cut the check campaign until they got paid off. But it was this George Soros financing these people to do the riots, and Soros is now giving money to these groups that are doing this today. And so the idea is if you destabilize the country, people panic and they'll surrender their freedoms to some governor that says, oh, we got to shut down churches. We got to shut down businesses. We got to shut down the entire middle class so that all that's left is the ruling class, deep state elites, and the common people that just believe what they're told through the media. So anyway, all this is in the book. It's called Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present. I go through the different dynamics. One is called psychological projection, where you accuse your opponent of what you're guilty of. Right. And so people that are racist will call everyone they don't like racist. People that are intolerant will call everyone they don't like intolerant. This is used every day on the news. Well, this particular party and this candidate's racist or intolerant. Well, no, no, no. The one casting the accusation is the really guilty one. And the other thing I bring out is mob emotional manipulation.
Yep.
Hitler had a guy named Joseph Goebbels. He noticed that everyone wants to be accepted in a group. And so he staged these Colosseum events with 100,000 people all given the Hitler salute, and everybody's pressured to give it. And so after the war, this was studied in America. And one of the studies they did is called the Solomon Asch Conformity Experiment. They pulled a bunch of students in the room. Everyone was in on it and paid except one naive student. And they put two cards on the front desk. And they would go around with the paid students first. And one card had one line on it. The other card had three lines on it. One the same size, one longer, one shorter. And they would go around the room, and one by one, the paid actor students would say that the shorter line on the one card was equal to the other card's line, even though it wasn't. It was obvious it wasn't. But by the time it got around to the naive student participant, 30% of them would deny their own eyes in order to fit in with the group.
With the group. Wow. I want to know what it's going to take to fix our nation so we don't fall into socialism.
Well, the first thing is forgiveness, realizing that the gospel, Jesus says, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those. So the people that are doing these writings, they are operating with hate. And Proverbs 6 says, six things the Lord hates. The last one is he that soweth discord amongst the brethren. That's the Alinsky strategy. That's the Hegel strategy, is intentionally sowing discord. The only way to get over that is the forgiveness of the gospel. Yes, you've been wrong. Jesus was wrong. And he was nailed to the cross and he forgave people. You forgive and then you trust God to move on your behalf. And then it's not to be a pawn, to realize that there are forces that want to manipulate people through emotions for a political agenda. I could get into it more. But whoever's president, when there's an economic collapse, gets voted out. Herbert Hoover is the perfect example. And so there is indications that there is the desire to cause the shutdown to continue, intentionally to cave the economy so that there will be a switch in the ruling party in the country. And we need to realize this and realize that if the party that's organizing the violence, if they get in, it'll be like China. They'll shut down churches and bulldoze them. It'll be like the Sharia countries. It'll be like North Korea. That one side does not like the gospel, and they don't like babies. They don't like Jesus's definition of marriage. You know, Jesus says in the beginning, God made them male and female.
So how can we pray? How can we pray?
Number one, that those that are promoting this get exposed and removed. I encourage people, go to the Black Lives Matter website. Click on What We Believe. They have on there, they're transgendered, queer affirming. That's what their word. And what's that mean? That means you have to affirm them publicly, otherwise you're hateful. They want to destroy the nuclear family. That's the mom, dad, baby. And they want to get rid of heteronormative thinking. That means even thinking that there's a male and a female. This is on the Black Lives Matter website. Go there, look at it. So they're doing a strategy called seizing the moral high ground, saying we want to get rid of racism. But no, you look at their website, they want to push getting rid of heteronormative thinking, getting rid of the family, queer affirming. This is a bait and switch. And the people need to realize, do not be sucked into this, because it's pushing an agenda that is anti-biblical. And we need to expose it and pray the Lord have mercy on us.
Hey, my guest today has been Bill Federer. He wrote a book that is very timely for us today, Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present, subtitle, how the deep state capitalizes on crisis to consolidate control. Bill, how can people get a copy of this book chocked full of information?
Oh, thank you. My website is AmericanMinute.com.
AmericanMinute.com. Bill, thanks so much for joining me today and letting us know about this great new book. You won't want to miss it. AmericanMinute.com is where you can find it. I'm Judy Redlich. Thank you all for tuning in to Encounter today. See you next time.
Encounter is you and the issues, where the facts and opinions make you an informed citizen of St. Louis. Thank you for your participation. Let a friend know about this talk and issues feature of Bot Radio Network and KSIV. Then join us next time for Encounter.
If you have comments or have a show suggestion for Encounter, I'd love for you to email me at jredlichspeaks@gmail.com.